Here by Rabbi David Kaplan. Rabbi Kaplan is originally from Chicago. He attended Northeastern University and received his rabbinical ordination in Jerusalem. He has lectured widely in Israel and America and is currently a senior lecturer at the main campus in Jerusalem.
Well, we had gotten to number 6 in section 7 on the hand of number 6 was that the Talmud says that your fingers, that the fingers and the earlobes could be used to block out any type of unwanted sounds. Sometimes in extreme circumstances, the person may have to get up and leave the company that he's keeping, right? You're in a room full of people, and if people insist on gossiping, even though you'd rather not be hearing it, then you've got no choice but to get up and leave. Number 7, the best method of all, one of the most, I know somebody who actually does this. He actually thinks before he speaks. Right, it's very few people in your life you're going to meet that way. I met this guy. It took me a while. A very dear friend of mine, and it took me a while to get used to. He had this annoying habit. I would ask him his opinion on something, and he would look at me. I'm saying, new. Yeah, just speak to me, right? And he'd actually wait, and he'd think before he speaks, right? So the best and the easiest way to avoid getting in trouble with one's mouth is to avoid a hasty response, to try to think a little bit. Did you get the handouts over here? There's a handout circulating somewhere. Or maybe they're in the middle there.
Yes.
The,
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Yesterday's
also might be floating around. If not, you could just make a photocopy. One of the guys got it. You can make a photocopy.
Did we not finish up yesterday?
We're almost finished. The last thing is like this. First of all, the benefits of watching one's mouth. So obviously, if you take a look, let's say aggravation, you don't say things that you later regret. And everybody knows that once you've said something, very often there are a lot of things we've said in our life which we wish, you feel, oh, I wish I could have taken that one back, right? And then you try to explain your way. Politicians do that all the time. Somebody says something, and they try to, people say, well, my words were taken out of context, and the truth is that they would rather have it back. A ball player says something about the manager, about the owner, and he says, well, my words were misconstrued, or so on and so forth, right? I remember when Yasser Arafat spoke about the jihad, right? When Yasser Arafat was quoted about encouraging a jihad on Jerusalem, right? So they, in order to try to put a band-aid over what he'd said, what he explained was he meant a jihad of peace, right? So they spoke to Arab scholars, right? They spoke to scholars on the Arab language, who said to them that jihad has only one connotation. There's no such thing as a jihad of peace. And one of the Israeli talk show hosts had a the whole country was making, you guys were here, the country was making fun of it. One of the talk show hosts said that two guys are sitting in a restaurant, and a guy walks into the restaurant, and one of the two people looks at the guy, walks in, and says, wow, look at that guy, is he ugly? So the other one says, what do you mean he's ugly? That's my brother you're talking about. He goes, I meant ugly in a good way. Everybody knows, you know, once you've said it, it's out. The cat's out of it. We know exactly what you meant. So, first of all, a person guards his mouth, there's less aggravation. It improves the quality of life because you're not focusing on the negative. You're always focusing on the positive. People tend to like you. People will respect you. Believe it or not, when people learn that you're the type of person who doesn't want to hear gossip, people will respect you for it. And the irony is, somebody who is a gossip monger, somebody who sits and tells you all the negative, all the dirt on other people, they lose respect in your eyes because you're wondering, yeah, now this person, he's saying this about that person. What's he going to say about me the minute he leaves, right? And then the biggest benefit of all, for those who like life, is that the Torah, the Pasuk says that Miha Yisha Chavetz Chaim, the guarantee, the reward for this mitzvah is longevity. A person merits long life because of the quality. And the Kabbalists say, the mystics, the Kabbalists say that a person has only a certain amount of words to say in his lifetime. After he uses up his quota of words, he dies, right? Now, Torah, any type of Torah and prayer, those words are not included in the quota. But anything, any type of mundane speech, mundane conversation, and certainly forbidden conversation, all of those count in his quota, and a person could be using up his quota, shortening his life by letting his mouth run. Now, We said yesterday that the way, one of the methods in order to help control speaking Lashon Hara is judging people favorably. When you give people the benefit of the doubt, so then you're less inclined to look harshly upon them. Human nature, it's funny, human nature is that we are very critical of other human beings. I heard Rabbi Pliskin was once giving a class. Rabbi Pliskin wrote the book. He was giving a class, and in the middle of the class, a dog wandered into the room. A little dog wandered into the room. So what was the reaction of everybody sitting in the room? Look at that odd dog. Look at that dog. Right? A doggy. Right? And everybody goes there, what a wonder, what a beautiful looking dog. And everybody's, what? The dog this, the dog that. What happens when a human being walks into the room that nobody knows? Right? A human being walks into the room, everybody's like kind of eyeing him very, why does he walk like that? Who does he think he is? I don't like his attitude. A human being, we're very critical. What happens when you see a dog wandering the streets? A stray dog. First thought is, gee, you know, I hope that dog has a place to stay. Right? What happens when you see a vagrant lying out somewhere in the street? Oh, bum, why don't they get a job like the rest of us? Right? The dog we're worried about. The dog we want to, a human being? The human being we're very critical of. And that's human nature. Right? It's human nature. We seem to be, for whatever reason, when we see a questionable act, or even a not questionable act, we immediately jump to the negative conclusions. Comes along the Torah. The Torah says, B'tzedek tishpot am Yisrael. You must judge your fellow man justly, right? Literally, on the basic level, it's a command to judges. The judges are being told by the Torah that they've got an obligation, that when they're judging, they have to judge justly, and they have to do everything they can in their power to maintain a strict system of justice. Now, what are the laws, what are the parameters of having to give people the benefit of the doubt? This verse is, the oral tradition tells us that this verse that says judge people justly is the Torah is telling us that we have to look to give our fellow man the benefit of the doubt. Now, what are the parameters and what are the limitations? First of all, let's say a righteous individual, somebody who is known to be a God-fearing Jew, and he is constantly trying to abide by the laws of the Torah. He is what you would call a righteous individual, somebody who rarely veers from the straight and narrow. Now, you see such a person engaged in questionable behavior, right? You drive past the McDonald's, and you look in, and there's the rabbi of your shul, a man known for his piety, is sitting in McDonald's, and he's pounding away at a cheeseburger, right? What is your halachic obligation, right? To use an extreme example, your halachic obligation under those circumstances is to give him the benefit of the doubt. You have to think to yourself, perhaps he's got some type of an ulcer or some type of illness, and he absolutely has to have this hamburger, or perhaps he assume that he's made, perhaps he's in a life-threatening situation. An ulcer could be sometimes a person has to absolutely eat, must eat. There's a true story like that. A rabbi saw a congregant of his in a non-kosher food establishment eating the non-kosher food, and the rabbi assumed, oh my goodness, you know, I've misjudged this man all along, until the man came to the rabbi without the rabbi having said a word to him. He said, rabbi, you know, the other day I had an ulcer attack and I had to step into a non-food establishment. Was it okay what I did? Right? And the man didn't even know that the rabbi had seen him. Right? Very often we jump to the wrong conclusions. If he's a righteous, God-fearing Jew, you've got to give him the benefit of the doubt. At a minimum, you have to assume that if he's in this food establishment, he must not know that it's non-kosher. Right? Maybe he misread the sign on the door. He thought it was some type of kosher supervision, or he doesn't know, or he's a foreigner. Whatever it is, you have the obligation to try to find some way to give him the benefit of the doubt. If the person is an average Jew, I mean, you know, he's an average guy. He tries. He's got his days, right? Once in a while he's good. Once in a while he's not so good. You know, he's more or less not a bad, you know, he's on the way. If he's an average type of person, again, it's subjective to the individual, an average type of person, the halacha requires that, the halacha says that in a situation which is 50-50, then it is, you should give him the benefit of the doubt. It's not absolutely mandatory. Right, but it is meritorious. It is meritorious to give him the benefit of the doubt. If he's a sinner, somebody who, you know, we're talking here about a flagrant sinner, somebody who knows the laws and he ignores the laws, he neglects the laws overtly. Such a person, even when he is involved in a proper action, even when you see him giving charity, then you have the right to assume that he's got some type of improper motivation, because he has a track record that everything he does in life is for the purpose of his own, thank you very much, for purpose of his own selfish motivation. So you have a right, not only have a right, the halacha says that under those circumstances you could assume that such a person, what he is doing, is not with the proper motivation. Now, this does not only apply to mitzvahs and averas, this applies to, I'll get to the question in a little while. This does not only apply to mitzvahs and averas, this also applies to any type of behavior. Anytime somebody bumps you, anytime somebody is inconsiderate, anytime somebody does anything that irritates you, if he's a righteous person, we have an obligation to assume that there were motivations that we are not aware of. If he is a sinner, we could assume that it was done flagrantly and he's got some type of evil scheme. And if he's an average person, then it's considered meritorious for us to try to find some type of benefit, some type of a credit for what he's doing. Now, number four, I've quoted a verse that says, be clean in the eyes of Hashem and Israel. That means there's a responsibility, even though people have to judge us favorably, we have a responsibility not to give anybody an excuse. Right? There's a verse that says, you must be clean in the eyes of Israel and in the eyes of Hashem and in Israel. That means, if you are involved in questionable behavior, right? Let's say it's perfectly legitimate behavior, but some onlooker may not understand it as being legitimate behavior. Right. Let's say you're walking, you're at your neighbor's house, and your neighbors have left town for a couple of weeks, right? And they've left you with the key to the house, right? And then one night you remembered that you lent your neighbor a book, right? So you go over to the house and you've got the key to the back door. And then late at night, when you wanted to read, you go into his house and you come out the back door late at night with a book under your arm, right? And just then a friend of yours drives by. And you know that he's seen you come out of this house late at night, right? Now, it could very well be people suspect you've broken into the house, right? Or that you've done something improper. You've got an obligation to call him up, let him know what you were doing in the house. The guy left me the key, he doesn't mind, we made an agreement in advance. There you'd have an obligation to do so in order to clean yourself, in order that you should not bring any suspicion on yourself. The Talmud says there was a family in Jerusalem that there were certain jobs in the temple. One of the jobs in the temple, you know what the showbreads were? The showbreads were these breads that were baked and they're put in the base in the temple on a table, and the breads were shaped like this. Right? There was a special shape that the breads had. And there was a family that knew the recipe for these breads in order to make them retain the shape. They knew how to put the bread into the oven, how to take it out of the oven. And this was called the showbread, the lechem aponim in the Beis HaMikdash. This family never ate white bread. They never ate regular standard white bread, refined flour, bread that made out of refined flour. They didn't want anyone in Jerusalem to suspect that the bread they're eating was bread that they pilfered from the Beis HaMikdash. Right? There's another family that was in charge of the incense. You know, they burned incense in the temple. This family, any females from this family never wore perfume, because they didn't want anybody to suspect that the fragrance coming from them is actually because they've been making use of the incense in the Beis HaMikdash, right? So that's what the Gemara says. In order to make sure to remain clean, they made sure not to be involved in any type of activity that would question their integrity whatsoever. Now, there's another idea called Maris Ayin. This is slightly different. Maris Ayin means doing something which can actually trigger, even though what you're doing is perfectly okay, under certain circumstances it's going to be absolutely prohibited. To go into your friend's house late at night, that's going to be permissible. It's questionable behavior to an onlooker, but it may be permissible. To do something which the average onlooker can't help but make a mistake, that's called Maris Ayin. Maris Ayin literally means the appearance, how it appears to the eye. For instance, you're eating a kosher ice cream bar, and you're holding a kosher ice cream bar in a Dairy Queen, you take a Dairy Queen wrapper, right? For some reason you've got a clean Dairy Queen wrapper, and you're holding a kosher ice cream bar in a Dairy Queen wrapper, and you're walking around eating it. What could an onlooker think other than you're eating a Dairy Queen ice cream bar, a Dilly bar, whatever it's called, right? You're eating something from a non-kosher food. Oh, I wish they would make Dairy Queen kosher, right? Maybe one day when Mashiach comes. But let's say your friend sees you, right? That's the ultimate in Olam. That is paradise, right? Your friend sees you walking around with a Dilly bar and with an ice cream bar and a Dairy Queen wrapper. What can you think other than? What can he possibly think other than the fact that what you're doing now is improper, right? There's actually a halachic discussion, I think I mentioned this once, about walking into a non-kosher food establishment at all. To walk into a non-kosher food establishment, let's say I want to go to McDonald's to get a drink, right? I want to go in to get a Coke. Coke is kosher, right? Am I allowed to get a Pepsi, whatever it is? Am I allowed to go into a McDonald's to get a Pepsi? So it's not so clear. There's some halachic authorities say you're not allowed to go in under any circumstances. Somebody sees an Orthodox Jew walking into McDonald's, what are you doing in such a place? Others contend, no, to the contrary. If they see a person wearing a yarmulke walk into a McDonald's, so obviously they know that you're either going to use the restroom or you're going to get a Coke. So there are different opinions in halachic authorities. But according to the halachic authorities, when we were growing up, this was a debate every Sunday afternoon because we played baseball right across the street from a McDonald's, right? After the game, there were a lot of people that wanted to go in and get Cokes, right? And of course I said, you sinners, you're not allowed to do that, right? And there's actually halachic authorities to say that it's prohibited. Some halachic authorities say it's okay. All right, so those are the basic parameters of the halacha to not allow, when you do have to judge favorably, and to try to avoid giving people an excuse to condemn you. Now, what are the consequences? Now, first of all, Talmud says, somebody who gives other people the benefit of the doubt, he will be given the benefit of the doubt. Somebody who does not give other people the benefit of the doubt, the benefit of the doubt will not be granted to him. There's actually a story, a guy dies, and he comes up to heaven, right? And here he is wandering around in the heavenly spheres, and he sees that there's a big tumult, a big hustle and bustle, and he says, what's going on? Right? Where's everybody running? And he hears this deep voice that it's your judgment day. Right? Oh wow! Right? And he goes, takes a look, and he sees this massive scale, big massive scale in front of him. So he's standing there watching, and then this deep voice says, "Bring in the mitzvahs!" Right? And these angels come running in with these big sacks full of mitzvahs. Right? And they pour the mitzvahs on the scale, and doing right, the mitzvahs go down. The scale goes down. He's doing very nicely. Then this deep voice says, bring in the sins, right? Big truck comes in, big dump truck comes in, right? Pulls up to the scale, starts dumping in the sins. Right? Another truck comes in, a whole caravan of truck. And the guy's watching this, becoming very depressed, right? Here it is, whole caravan of sins, right? Things are not looking. He's watching them unload the sins onto the scale, right? And as he's watching, he says, oh, wow, you nailed me for that. Ooh, I didn't know anybody was watching. Ooh, is that embarrassing, right? And he sees all the sins are being unloaded. Finally, he says, hold, what about that Aveira right over there? No, I didn't do that Aveira. And that one over there, whose Aveira is that? What's that doing over here? He says, a whole bunch of sins that are being dumped on the scale. He says, these are not my sins. Why am I getting nailed for this? So the deep voice comes out and tells him, those are the sins of all of the people that learned from your actions. Those people that saw you eating cheeseburgers, and therefore they assume, well, cheeseburgers, okay, and they ate you. Those people that saw you run out of shul early, those people that heard you speak gossiping, and those people that learned from your actions, everything they learned from and did, you are going to be tagged with their, you get credit, or you get blamed for their averas. So the man looks at the judge, whoever it is that's judging, says, hold on a second, whoa, 1 second, I learned Torah. They should have judged me favorably. They should have given me the benefit of the doubt. Right? They had an obligation. When they saw me eating a cheeseburger, they should assume that obviously I'm starving to death. Why should they learn from my action? So the voice says to him, what about you? Did you give everybody the benefit of the doubt? If you gave others the benefit of the doubt, then you can ask that they should have given you the benefit of the doubt. If you didn't give others the benefit of the doubt, you have no right to assume that they should give you, you have no right to demand that they should give you the benefit of the doubt. So the Gemara says, if you judge others favorably, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges us. What does it mean to judge us favorably? HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows our motivation down to the nth detail. He knows exactly what it is that's motivating us. What does it mean to judge us favorably? That means that there's a certain leniency that's possible, but that leniency can only be arrived at if it's dictated by our actions. Now listen to the following story from the Gemara. Sorry. The Gemara says as follows. It's in Tractate Shabbos. Anybody wants to look at Tractate Shabbos, page 127. There's a man who went from the Upper Galilee. A man living in the Upper Galilee. And he hired himself out to somebody in the south of Israel. He hired himself out as a worker. After 3 years of working on this man's, apparently this man had a some type of farm or whatever it was he had. After 3 years, the worker said to the boss, I would like you to pay me so that I could go home and support my wife and children. Right? I'd like my payment, 3 years worth of payment. So the boss said to him, sorry, I don't have any money. So he said, all right, that's okay. Let me have produce instead. I'll take produce instead of money. Sorry, I haven't got any produce. Said, all right, let me have some real estate. I'll take real estate. I could sell the real estate, take the money from the real estate and go home. Let me have some real estate. He said, sorry, I don't have any. All right, so let me have some livestock. I'll take livestock. He said, I don't have any. Then let me have some pillows and blankets and any type of movables that you can have that I can take with me so I can sell and make some money. He said, sorry, I haven't got. Right? So what did the man do? The man took his equipment, very depressed state, and he went home. Right? He went home. This was on Erev Yom Kippur. After the holiday, what holiday can that be, Yom Kippur? Sukkot. After Sukkot, the man, the owner, takes the money, and he comes to this guy's house in the Galilee, and he's loaded with three donkeys. He comes with three donkeys, one donkey carrying food, another donkey carrying drink, and another donkey carrying all sorts of delicacies. Right? And he walks up to this guy, he comes to this guy's house, and the two of them ate and drank together. And then the boss, after they finish eating and drinking, the boss pays him the money. And he says to him, let me ask you a question. When I said to you that I didn't have any money to pay you, what were you thinking? What did you suspect me of? When you asked me for your salary and I said I don't have it, after 3 years of hard work, you asked me for your salary and I said I didn't have any money to pay you, what were you thinking? I figured that you had an opportunity to buy some merchandise. You could make a killing on some merchandise. You got it cheap, so you spent all your money on that. He said, all right. And when I told you that I haven't got any... When I told you that I haven't got any livestock, what did you suspect me of? I suspected that all of your livestock was rented out to somebody else. And when I told you I don't have any real estate, what did you suspect? I said, I figured that your real estate was also hired out to other people. Right? People hire a piece of land so they could work the land for the produce. And when I told you that I haven't got any produce, what did you suspect? I figured maybe your produce wasn't tied, therefore you couldn't give me any produce. And when I told you that I haven't got any pillows and blankets, what did you suspect me of? That I figured that you've given, you've dedicated, you've pledged all of your pillows and blankets to the Beis HaMikdash. They're no longer yours. Once you pledge them, they're no longer yours. So the man said to him, I swear to you, Ha'avoda means I swear to you, that's exactly what happened. Every single thing that you said on each one of those details is exactly what happened. The same way that you judged me favorably, Hashem should judge you favorably. Right? Now, the commentaries say that the man, the worker, was actually Rabbi Akiva. The man who came from the Upper Galilee was actually Rabbi Akiva working for somebody down in the south. It was actually Rabbi Akiva. There's a very fundamental lesson that comes out of this story. When you're looking to judge somebody favorably, when you see somebody behaving questionably, how does a worker feel after 3 years? Remember, according to Torah law, you have to pay on time. Right? This man has obviously told him that after 3 years I'm going to pay you. When you have somebody that is doing something questionable and you're looking to find, you want to judge them favorably, you must think of some alternative for their behavior. It's not enough to just say, well, there must be a good reason for it. That's not enough, because if we just say there must be a good reason for it, in our heart of hearts, we're not going to assume that that's really why he's behaving that way. What we have to do is we have to find, realistically, try to think up some reason, what it is, come up with any type of explanation, as ridiculous as the explanation may be, come up with any type of explanation for why this person is behaving the way he is. There's another consequence. You ever hear people make weddings, right? This has happened. I know that this has happened. Bigger things, smaller things than this have happened, right? Somebody's making a wedding and you find out you weren't invited, right? You realize you have not been invited to the wedding, right? So you don't talk to the person. Some people have stopped talking to each other for years because of wedding invitations, right? I wasn't invited to the wedding, never, right? Perhaps that in all the tumult, they simply forgot about you, as important as you are. Maybe they forgot about you, right? Perhaps that when it got messed up in the mail, perhaps it was delivered and your wife never gave it to you, or your children ate it before it got to you, or any of other possibilities that could happen to a piece of mail, right? What happens is people eventually become enemies, simply because they have not given each other the benefit of the doubt, and eventually because somebody's done something to me where I have condemned them in my own mind. By condemning them in my own mind, we become enemies, and eventually I'm taking revenge for something which, in fact, they never actually did. I'm actually taking revenge for something which was not their fault to begin with. Now, the only way, are there any questions up until this point? Somebody had a question earlier. Yeah.
That goes the same with Lashon Hara, right? If you happen to hear Lashon Hara, you should say to yourself that the person didn't say it or they meant to
say it. Yeah, if you hear Lashon Hara, you have an obligation to not believe it is the truth.
Like, Joe said this about you.
Right, you have an obligation to...
He said something different.
You have an obligation to not believe it is the truth, and at a minimum maybe assume that the guy who told you the story is exaggerating or got the story wrong or something, any type of explanation other than condemning Joe in your mind. Yeah, question.
Going back a little while in what you were saying, you said that you can't go into a McDonald's. You can go into a supermarket that has both kosher and non-kosher products, correct?
Yes, you could.
But there's an issue as to whether or not you can go into a McDonald's, which also has both kosher and non-kosher products, as you've defined it. Where do you draw the line?
You draw the line at the door. Right? Mm-hmm. McDonald's is to be regarded as trafe from the word go. Right? You don't go into McDonald's. The only reason you'd go into McDonald's, if you're stuck somewhere and you're desperate for a Coke, then you go into a McDonald's. You do not, a supermarket, it's understood that the supermarket, you have to go in somewhere to buy. What could you possibly be doing in a McDonald's? Right? I know a story, actually. A very classic story, that a woman who was invited by her non-religious relatives to go eat at, I think it was a Gold Coin restaurant, right? It was a restaurant chain called Gold Coin. She was invited with her non-religious relatives, invited her out to go eat at the Gold Coin, or to go eat at some type of family get-together at a non-kosher food establishment. And she said, absolutely not. Only keeps kosher. She's not allowed even to be seen in such a place. She's not allowed into such a place. You're welcome to come to my house. I can't go with you to your house. I can't eat in a food establishment. Fine. The non-religious relatives had a hard time with it, but it was acceptable, right? Finally, this woman was invited out with her. She was out one night with her religious friends. And the religious friends, after going out to see a movie, they decided to go get a cup of coffee. Let's say, for argument's sake, that coffee is kosher even in a non-kosher food establishment. For argument's sake, they decided to go out and have a cup of coffee. This woman would not drink the coffee. They went to a Gold Coin restaurant. This woman would not drink the coffee, but she was sitting there with her religious friends, right, while they were drinking coffee. While she was sitting there in the restaurant, the relative that had invited her, the non-religious relative that had invited her out, walked into the restaurant, right? And there she is, she sees her religious relative, her observant relative, sitting there in a restaurant, and she says, oh, for us it's not good enough, but for them it is good enough, right? There's nothing you could say under those circumstances, you just don't understand, right? That doesn't work, right? If it's prohibited, a halacha, you have an obligation to avoid it. To go into a non-kosher restaurant to get a cup of coffee is extremely questionable. It's extremely questionable. Then you run into the other questions about, should you take your yarmulke off in such a place or not, right? Or should you put a baseball cap on, whatever it is. Okay, but under most circumstances, it should be avoided. Now, any other questions?
Yeah.
Dima?
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I feel not very easy making shopping or riding a train on Saturday night after Shabbos, because I think that some people, possibly Jews, may not be aware that Shabbos actually ends with sunset. They may think that Shabbos ends on midnight.
That you don't have to worry about. You have the halachic right. You have a halachic right, and you are allowed to explain to them. I know that some people, we have the problem that Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked if you're allowed to drive to shul after candle lighting time, because when a woman lights candles on Erev Shabbos, it's Shabbos for her, it's not yet Shabbos for her husband. And very often people drive Friday night to shul, leave the car in shul, and then they have the car to drive home after Shabbos, after Havdalah is made in shul, they drive home. So some people had a question, well, if I'm driving to shul and the women have all lit candles, it looks like I'm desecrating Shabbos. How lucky is you're allowed to? Because anybody who should know better does know what you're doing. If you see somebody is looking at you, and they're questioning your behavior, then you have an obligation to try to explain it to them. Okay? Now, first of all, how do you, in order to gain mastery of this, which is one of the most difficult, is what we call a mind mitzvah. It's a mitzvah which you have an obligation to do with your mind, the way you view other people. So the way to gain mastery of such a mitzvah, first of all, you have to practice. Right? And by practice, I mean that any situation you're in, where you're irritated, you're aggravated, somebody has bothered you or upset you in any way, shape, or form, what you have to do is try to find some explanation, even if you don't really believe it. The only way to eventually turn your knee-jerk reaction into one of judging favorably, that means we're striving to get to the point where every time I witness questionable behavior, my automatic instinct is to assume the best instead of assuming the worst. How does a person get to that point?
Please turn the tape to the other side.